The Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny is presented for the people by Caesars Sportsbook. You bet, you get with Caesars Rewards. Must be 21 or older.
Welcome back to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny. Only NFL podcasts. Where one of the hosts says, Harrison Butker is the NFL player he'd most like to sniff. That's Lenny. I'm Mina Kimes. We are talking today about the division in which Harrison Butker plays, maybe not the most prominent player. It is time to preview the AFC West, and I am joined by JP Acosta, who I almost uninvited after he tweeted that when the Warped Tour happened, he was like four. Really upsetting to see that, JP, that you say that because there's a clip on the internet circulating, I reposted it, of Jaguars players circa 2004, really Jack Del Rio, reacting to the fact that the Warped Tour was happening near their practice field, which was incredible.
Yeah, I had no idea that the Warped Tour was a tour. I thought it was a band. So when it got put in our work chat at SB Nation, I was like, hey, who are these people? And just immediately,
so upset.
10 messages of JP, oh my God, why don't you know this? And I'm like, dog, I was four when this happened. I don't have anything like pre-2006. My memory is very
No. I guess I can use this opportunity to educate you. Warped Tour was a very seminal tour for people my age who liked a certain kind of music. This is really like early 2000s football and early 2000s Warped Tour is like the perfect Venn diagram of my interests. I'll send you some links after, JP. I'll send you some bands. You've heard of some of the bands that played, right? Like Yellow Card, All-American Rejects, Saves the Day.
I've heard of All-American Rejects.
Okay.
There might be some hits and misses in there, but oh my God. I know some of them.
All right. Well, the clip's very funny. You guys can check it out. We are not here to talk about the AFC South, despite the fact that sort of you're in AFC Southland out there in Florida. We are talking about the West, which is a really interesting division. As I was doing this, I mean, I think we all kind of have the Chiefs on top, obviously, and top of the NFL. And we'll talk about the Chiefs, of course, who are in the news this week with some injuries and contract stuff. But I think the Broncos, Chargers, Raiders, kind of hard teams to get your arms around, maybe, especially the Broncos and the Raiders to some degree. So I'm excited to do this. Excited to talk this through with you. Let's start with the Broncos. Is that okay? Cause I think that's the one that I need to talk through the most. Cause I'm having trouble placing them, not just in the context of this division, but in the NFL. I think it starts with the obvious fact that we're coming off of Russell Wilson's worst season as an NFL player. So trying to project what the Broncos will be, what their goal should be, whether they can compete for a playoff spot, really comes down to the simple question of, can Sean Payton get more out of Russell Wilson? And I think it's a question is like, what does more look like? What is he capable of at this point in his career? So I think we should probably start there before we get to the defense, which, you know, is a little bit easier to talk about. How do you, like, view the marriage of Peyton and Wilson?
I think it's kind of weird initially when it first happened because my biggest question was, what is Sean Payton going to try and turn Russell Wilson into? Like, we all see, oh, he had great experience with Drew Brees. That partnership worked really well. Russell Wilson and Drew Brees are not the same type of quarterback at all. And if we look at what Russell Wilson was doing last year, we all saw what he looked like on tape, but the stats back it up. He was really bad in almost every category that he used to be very good in. You know, from in short area accuracy, he was 27th out of 28th in positive play rate. He was not very good in the short area. He had a negative 0.42 EPA per attempt in that area. It was really bad. On everything. It looked like he just lost confidence or just lost something. It felt like, you know, when the Monstars took the NBA player's powers, yeah. It looked like he was out there like without the powers that he used to have. So I'm wondering, what is Sean Payton going to try and make Russell Wilson into? Is he going to try and turn this into a play action heavy scheme where you kind of get him out of the pocket and get him away from the areas that make him very uncomfortable, like we saw last year? Or is he going to try and turn him into another Drew Brees, which I don't know if that's going to work with Russell Wilson at this stage in his career?
I think Sean Payton, who I've talked about, I had him talked about in my coaches rankings pod, is, you know, he's one of the best coaches in the history of the NFL. And he is not going to force Wilson into a late career Drew Brees sized box. Like, Sean Payton is not stupid, right? He watched last year. I've heard him talk about it a little bit. You know, he has probably been watching, you know, he's aware of Wilson's trajectory over the last few years. So for him, it comes down to, okay, how do I optimize the players we have? How do I get more out of the quarterback? How do I cut back? How do I design around some of the weaknesses that have become pretty apparent? And I want to start by saying, Russell Wilson, you know, those weaknesses come with a pretty significant and important caveat, which is the situation was awful last year, both in terms of play calling and just the general operation of the offense. So many injuries on that offensive line. This was, according to Football Outsiders, adjusted games lost metric, the most injured team in football last year. But it was the offensive line in particular was a nightmare. And it's like, it was like a perfect storm, Jay, because it's like you had an injured offensive line. You lose the receiver. I mean, you lose Tim Patrick for the season. I know that sounds like it's Tim Patrick, but Tim Patrick is a good player. And I actually thought he was a really good match with Russell Wilson because he was a deep threat for them. Gone. You know, the other receivers were in and out, KJ Hamler half the season, whatever. So it was like a perfect storm of, there were areas in which Wilson was already declining as a quarterback dating back to the last year or so in Seattle. And then he ran into a situation that was bad for him, both in terms of the play calling and the injuries, that I think all of those things kind of combined to make everybody look worse than they were. Like, one of the things I think about Wilson that I don't think is going to change at this point in his career is he's just less elusive in the pocket. I mean, something that really jumps out is his sack rate when pressured. You know, even the last final 3 years in Seattle, he was about average in that regard. And last year, he had a 28% sack rate when pressured, which is the sixth highest in the NFL. I'm surprised it wasn't higher, honestly, watching him. I don't think that's reversing. Like, he is not going to get more elusive. But he still has a good arm. You saw that on display a little bit. So I think for Peyton, it's kind of like, okay, how can I optimize this offense to mitigate the pressure issue, allow Russell Wilson to hunt for matchups, which is, you know, Peyton's brand of football, and take advantage of his deep ball? And I think those three things are kind of where you start in terms of, like, how do we make this offense look competent?
Yeah, and I think with the offseason moves, I think they're kind of headed that way. You know, with adding Mike McGlinchey to the offensive line, I think they're going to be more leaning into the ground game.
Yes.
They're going to try and get teams into heavier boxes, heavier personnel, going to try and pound teams in the run game. And then you get Russell Wilson out the pocket, he can still get the deep ball down there. He can still get the ball to Cortland Sutton, to Jerry Jeudy, Tim Patrick. On paper, this receiver room is really, really good. It's just, can Russell Wilson work in that offense? I think it's probably his best option at this point, which is, it's not necessarily letting Russ cook, but it's more like, we're going to give you the instructions, you know.
Yeah.
We're not going to tell you, like, hey, this is all yours. But once you get out that pocket, here's what you do. It's boot action, you know. And I think that's the best way for Russell Wilson to kind of age gracefully into the back end of his career.
And your point about the run game is really important because, yeah, I mean, first of all, everything they've done offseason-wise in terms of personnel points to an emphasis on the run game. You talk about the signing of Lynchy, Powers out of Baltimore, tight ends are bringing in. This is a team that wants to do a better job running the football. One of the, I think, best news for this team we've heard in a while is that Javonte Williams is, like, practicing. I thought that might drag out into camp. So that's fantastic news. He's seems to be fully back, which is amazing. Because I think at this point in Wilson's career, having an efficient run game, which was not the case last year, it matters a lot. Apart because another thing that, like, he struggled with even before last season, this was something discussed a lot in Seattle those final 2 years, is He really struggled against too high coverage, which was not the case his entire career. I want to be clear about that. If you actually look back in earlier years, the numbers are not as stark. But from 2020, 21, 22, there's a pretty big discrepancy between his performance versus single high versus too high. Versus single high, ninth in on target percentage, 14th in adjusted completion percentage, 17th in CPOE. Not amazing. It's a lot of that's dragged down by last year. Versus too high, 32nd in on target, 28th in adjusted completion, 31st in CPOE. Now, as you know, JP, when you face too high, you can, you know, pull a Patrick Mahomes and turn into a quick game, like a short throw killing machine. But that's just not Russell Wilson. What you can also do is run the football and run defenses out of those looks. And I think it's really important for him that Denver has the capacity to do that.
Yeah, and I think it goes back to something I wrote about last year, which is widening the margin for error for your quarterback. You don't want to make it so that every throw has to be perfect or everything's just going to completely fall apart. With the run game, having that efficient run game, you're going to have to bring down a defender if that's going to if you're going to get teams out of too high. So with that, with Russell Wilson, you don't want him to consistently have to make perfect throws every time because he just can't do that anymore. And that's fine at this point in his career. But now that he's at this age, you need to give him something to help him out a little bit. And I think Sean Payton and the front office, they've kind of leaned into that a little bit more.
I also really like the addition of Samaje Perine to that end, by the way. That was another like kind of flew under the radar signing where I heard Payton talking about him. I think he compared him to Kamara. He wasn't saying like he was the same player as Kamara. But, you know, just talking about how he's going to use him. And I think he's a really good player. And I think the combination of a healthy Williams, Perine, better offensive line really reduces like the margins for error as you're talking about. And and I still like this group of skill players. Love Greg Dulcich. I'm really excited to see what Peyton does with him. The ingredients are there to, you know, maybe not cook, but make like a decent meal. Like a competent meal. You just need Wilson to be a little bit better and a lot better, frankly. But he's definitely, you know, injuries notwithstanding it's a good situation for a quarterback. So I'm not going to try to project what will happen just because I do think some of the things, as I talked about, are not going to reverse. But I also think we really saw the worst possible scenario last year.
It was petri dish of like bad vibes.
Dude, you alluded to this at the top. The short accuracy stuff is what threw me the most when he was just like dirting. I mean, he just looked totally broken. So
it was really bad. And even then, he had a 17.9% sack rate on those short passes. So if he wasn't dirting the ball, he was getting sacked on timing passes. So it just all of it was not good at all.
The defense is a little bit easier to talk about. I mean, this is a defense that last year, not talk about, but I guess project maybe is what I want to say. They finished 10th in DVOA. They're very good against the pass, less good against the run. They did trade away Bradley Chubb halfway through the season, which certainly affected the pass rush. But they have a lot of really good players, you know, led, of course, by Patrick Surtain. You got Justin Simmons. I'm not really sure who's playing safety next to Justin Simmons. I know Kareem Jackson is back, but I don't know if he's going to start. Randy Gregory was hurt last year. Baron Browning does open the season hurt, which sucks because I think he's a good player. They signed Frank Clark. They drafted Drew Sanders, fun draft pick, linebacker who is really good at rushing the passer. And then they added Zach Allen after losing Draymond Jones. So I guess just kind of looking at it as a whole. Oh, and very notably, Ejiro Evero, the defensive coordinator, is gone. Vance Joseph. No. Yeah, Vance Joseph it is in. Vance yeah, Joseph. Sorry. I'm all the different defensive coordinators.
The Arizona coaching pipeline is very
yes.
Weird.
Okay, so Joseph is in. How do you view this group as a whole? Like, do you think that they finished 10th last year? When you look at all the changes that I alluded to, step forward, step back, like what do you think?
I think they maybe take a little step back, but I don't think it's going to be that much because that defense is still going to be really, really good. I mean, you talk about if Kareem Jackson is going to start next to Justin Simmons. I think Caden Stearns is going to take that spot. I think Caden Stearns, in Justin Simmons' absence last year, played really, really good. They asked him to do a lot of different things, and he was honestly like, they have such a talented DB room, but they're still kind of missing a consistent second corner, which will either be Damari Mathis or Riley Moss. We'll see going into this year. Yeah. I think Vance Joseph is going to look at Drew Sanders and think, hey, I had Isaiah Simmons and Zaven Collins, who are big linebackers who can blitz. Let's just go get another big linebacker who can blitz, and we'll see what we can do here. So I really do think this defense, if they take a step back, it's going to be by a little bit, but they're still extremely talented. It sucks that Baron Browning is hurt to start the season because he was
awesome. I really like him.
They played him in middle linebacker and he was good, but then they moved him to edge and he was awesome. So it's really cool to have that ability. So they're going to be really good again. It's just, I don't know if it's going to be like top 10 good. It might be 11, 12, but they'll still be very good.
If you guys don't know who Riley Moss is, Google cornerback Riley Moss for a fun surprise. So I agree. I'm optimistic. I am very, though, intrigued. I had a brain fart at the top about Joseph, but I think one of the more interesting things is the philosophical change, because, which is funny, like we talk about it with the Vikings, big, and the Dolphins, Cardinals. I mean, pardon me, Broncos going from Evero to Joseph is on its face pretty significant philosophical change defensively. I mean, Arizona under Vance, when he coached the defense there for quite some time, had the highest blitz rate in the NFL, played a lot of cover three, cover one. Last year, the Broncos defense were a big quarters team, a lot of split safety, a lot of disguise. Did blitz at a pretty high race, which I think is interesting because Evero is a Fangio tree guy and people don't always associate Fangio with that. I think some of that had to do with personnel. And but very notably, and this is what I'm interested in, Broncos, I talked about at the top, I mentioned that the run defense was not great. They played a ton of light boxes, which of course is a Fangio thing. That's not what Arizona did with Joseph. Now, again, some of that I think is personnel. So it's kind of hard for me to say. I think Arizona has had such unique defensive players over the last few years and also holes in their defense. It's kind of hard for me to say, oh, Vance Joseph's going to come in, he's going to blitz like crazy, they're going to, you know, no longer play with light boxes. I don't know if that's the case, but it has the potential to be rather different, JP, which I think is going to be interesting to watch in the first few weeks of the season.
Yeah, one of the things that I noticed when I was going back and watching the Ejiro Evero defense for the Broncos is when they did play cover three, it was always late rotation.
Yep.
It was going to be, they're going to go from too high, they're going to buzz down late. That's a lot of what Caden Stearns did. He was the buzz down defender. So I think they'll probably incorporate that early in the season as they still try to get adjusted. And that's how they'll mitigate kind of that just not greatness against the run. They'll buzz a guy down late. But I do think it'll be a little bit more interesting of a schematic change, an identity change. Because like you said, Arizona was very weird in terms of their personnel, which was a whole bunch of guys who maybe can do this well, also can do this. Nobody's really great at one thing. And we know in Denver, you have some guys who are great at certain things. You know, you have Patrick Sertan, who is great, and you can just leave him on an island. He is scheme proof. You can change whatever you want about the scheme. You just know if you have number two out there, you can leave him alone and think about everybody else on the defense. So I think having Justin Simmons, that'll kind of mitigate the identity personnel.
1,000%. Yeah. I mean, the secondary is just better than anything Joseph had to work. So it's just kind of like, okay, well maybe, you know, he's been a creative play caller, a very experienced play caller. So that's why I'm reluctant to say, well, he's going to come in and they're going to do this and this and this. It's like, well, you know, it's very different players. And I think he's probably going to tailor the defense to the strengths of the players. Shoot. Again, I would look at the last couple of years and you're not really wanting to change that much because of how good this defense has been, but maybe there's things he can do to get more out of players. You know, Zach Allen is a player he essentially brought with him from Arizona. I think he's a good player at defensive end. So yeah, you know, kind of different players, different tools. It'll be interesting. I'm excited. I mean, it's a good hire. You know, I thought he got a lot out of an Arizona defense that was not very talented at points.
Yeah.
So I didn't hate that at all as much as losing Evero Hurts. Yeah. So Denver Broncos, interesting team. Wait a second. We'll talk about them kind of in the context of the division at the end. Let's do the Chiefs here. So I alluded to some news for Kansas City. Kadarius Toney tweaked. I want to get this right. Tweaked his knee. It's not something you ever want to hear, especially with a player who's had injuries like him. Kind of reluctant to say more about it. You know, I haven't seen anything dramatic about it. And then there's the Chris Jones wanting to get paid. But let's put that off. Let's talk about the Chiefs defense in a second. Let's focus on the offense. The Toney thing matters, I think. Let's start there because the Chiefs do not need Kadarius Toney. I don't think they need anyone except for Travis Kelce and an offensive line, other than, of course, Patrick Mahomes. But the way they used him last year, which is to say everywhere in every way, was pretty intriguing. And I have to think that was something, you know, given how much they traded for him, like built into their plans for this year. It's like, okay, we got this guy. He's got like really absurd movement skills. We can line up in the back. We can use him on jet sweeps and end arounds. Remember the motion and TD in the Super Bowl? Like, he's so interesting as a player. It combined with, of course, Andy Reid, who's this madman. It's one of those things I could take, just kind of put them over the top in certain games. So if I do think he matters, even if he is not, and I don't think ever will be, a traditional number one.
Yeah, I think the potential of losing Kadarius Toney matters a bit, but I also wonder how much have they planned Sky Moore to be the kind of break glass in case of emergency. Because before they added Kadarius Toney, he was doing a lot of that stuff as well. He was doing a lot of that motion, a lot of the sweep stuff. So I wonder how much of that is, hey, we have Sky Moore, we can live without having Kadarius Toney for the early parts of the season. I think Rashee Rice is going to play a lot in this offense. I still think the way that they kind of shifted their offense from being the deep ball or no ball offense that we saw when Patrick Mahomes first got there to the most efficient offense we've probably ever seen in the NFL in the span of like a year, year and a half is insane. But I do think that having guys like Rashee Rice, who's a very good complement to what Sky Moore or Kadarius Toney already do, it's gonna make a lot of a difference for this Chiefs offense. So I don't know if it's a huge loss of Kadarius Toney, but it'll hurt for a little bit in the first part of the season.
Yeah, with the Chiefs offense, it's always just like what matters. I think is the place you start from. Because they have shown us in that they can make every adaptation, that Patrick Mahomes can solve every problem. I'm not going to bore people with the numbers. You can look them up. I mean, last year they were, you know, he was bottom 10 team and average at the target. Didn't matter. Still incredibly efficient. The best rushing efficiency of Patrick Mahomes' career. Every year, by the way, in the Mahomes era, they've just gotten better and better at running the football because they've invested in that offensive line, which now they have the best interior offensive line in the Chiefs, Eagles will get the run for the money, but they're it's between them and the Eagles, really. And you know, so when you look at this offense and you ask, okay, what matters? I guess, like I said, Toney for me is like, okay, like, this is a fun thing, but I don't think either of us are particularly worried. I think the only thing that really matters is if they lose Travis Kelce. I guess you could argue if Donovan Smith is a train wreck, maybe that'll matter. What do you think?
I think that's where I would start. When I was looking at my notes through going back through the Chiefs offense, I was like, I don't know where you'd really say the big question is outside of if these two tackles they signed don't pan out. I mean, they paid Juwan Taylor $80 million. I thought they were going to pay him to play left, which would have been really weird because he'd only played right his entire career in the NFL. But they're going to play him at right. Davis Smith's going to play left. And we've seen that you do kind of have to protect Patrick Mahomes. As much as he is a problem solver from the pocket, we've seen that you have to actually keep him upright. But the one thing that the Chiefs, the multiple things they have going for them is they have Andy Heck, the offensive line coach, who's terrific.
Yeah.
They have Andy Reid, and they have Patrick Mahomes. That is the perfect nucleus outside of Philadelphia for any offensive lineman you bring in to succeed. So outside of like that, the edge, the tackle problems, I don't really see much stopping the Chiefs offense because they have so many problem solvers.
I think with Donovan Smith, there's a lot of sort of variables that go into like our evaluation of whether he can be better, because he was bad last year. He was bad. And also had a ton of penalties. Everybody knows this. We talked about it. And he was better, you know, during the Bucs Super Bowl run, but it's like, okay, how do I put this? There's things that kind of make you optimistic, and I think there's things that make you nervous as a Chiefs fan. The things that make you nervous are, well, yeah, he was better during the Bucs run, but Tom Brady was getting the ball out so unbelievably quickly. Not the case, Kansas City. I think the things that make you optimistic are that he was injured last year. I've read that he was battling injuries at various points all season, that he was playing behind a frankly tire fire situation in Tampa. Now he gets to play next to the aforementioned, you know, incredible interior offensive line. So those things, and then that he can be helped out. There's schematically things that I think, you know, the Chiefs play with a ton of tight ends on the field. That should help as well. I think, you know, some of the, like, I think their run game is generally just a lot better and, you know, more diverse than Tampa's. It is going to be interesting to see early on if he has some of those struggles, because yeah, I think you could argue that more, that probably does. I don't know what matters more, him or Travis Kelce. They both matter. Those are the two things that matter. Those are the only two things that I think could derail what you think you and I both agree projects to continue to be, you know, an unstoppable killing machine on offense.
It's going
to be. Yeah. I mean, it's the Chiefs. You know, I'm not going to do this. Chris Jones matters a lot. Okay. So that's, I do want to talk about that, because he's not there as of this recording. Maybe he'll be there, and maybe there'll be a deal done by the time this comes out. But as of Tuesday, July 25th, the two sides are apart on Chris Jones' contract. He wants to get, I think it's been reported, something a little bit closer to the Aaron Donald contract, which no defensive tackle has. There's been a lot of big defensive tackle contracts recently, but nobody's come close to the I think it's $31 million a year Aaron Donald contract. Jones, I haven't seen that he wants to top it, but he wants to be right there. And JP, I think he deserves it, man. Like, I just looking through some of Chris Jones' stats this year and thinking through some of his performances last season, not only did he play a ton of football, I posted this on Twitter, he had the most snaps of any defensive tackle in the NFL last year, second most if you only count the regular season, so it wasn't just because the Chiefs went to the Super Bowl. He ranked first in like literally every category. He ranked first in pass rush win rate, which is ESPN's metric. If you beat a block in 2.5 seconds or less, no other Chiefs defensive tackle ranked in the top 50. He ranked first amongst all defensive tackles in pressures. The next Chief was Kalen Saunders, who's no longer a Chief. He ranked first in pass rush wins versus double teams last year by a massive margin between him and Aaron Donald. He ranked first in most sacks created. I could go on and on. The point is, he was incredible. He was prolific. And they don't really have a lot of depth behind him. Like, you take him out of this defense and it looks very different.
It is vastly different without Chris Jones. And one of the things that he does is he's kind of their closer. You know, when it comes down to late points in the games, we've all seen it last season. When the game gets real close, Chris Jones just seems to hit another level. He did that to the Raiders like every game last season. He did it in the Chiefs game. He did it in the Super Bowl, where he was just unblockable for like the entire fourth quarter. And they really kind of design their pass rush plan off of Chris Jones. They move Chris Jones out to the edge.
Yeah.
They move him across a defensive line. They design everything around him and his ability to win in no matter what situation. So to me, I would pay him anything that he asked for. I think that he is that good. He is that important to that defense. And with them, they're going to be really good on defense. Without him, I don't know how good they're going to be.
You know, like, we talk a lot about the ways in which having Mahomes and Reed allows the Chiefs to save money. You know, I think we all agree the Chiefs don't need to spend a lot of money at receiver. Obviously running back. This is where they can't save money. I just, that's, you know, kind of like, I just look at this team and I like the young talent and we're going to talk about it, but they can't. This is just, he has them. Like, they need him. He has them. You talked about him being moved to the edge. It's funny. Like, year one when they did that, it was like kind of a disaster, but I think they really figured it out last year. I mean, he didn't play on the edge a ton, but whenever I think his sack rate, when playing up from the edge and pressure rate was like pretty efficient.
Really good.
Yeah, man. He's so strong. He's so, like, he's got moves. He's just such an amazing player. And yeah, like, the depth thing is a real issue. I think, like, you know, they have young talent. I thought Karlaftis came on as the season went on. They did draft, I'll make sure I say his name right. I'm trying to get this one locked in. Felix Adedike Uzomah, out of K-State, who was a super prolific pass rusher in college, but, you know, he's a rookie. I don't know. I guess that, let me ask you that. Do you feel like, let's assume the deal gets done. I think the deal will get done. How do you feel about the pass rush around Jones? Like, do you think it's good enough?
I think they could stand to probably add one more different type of pass rusher. I think they all have pass rushers who are of the same type. Felix Adedike Uzomah is probably the only one that's very different, but he's more of a high effort bend player. They don't have anybody who's truly naturally bend, get around the corner. George Karlaftis isn't that. Charles Omenihu, who they just signed from San Francisco, he's not that. Mike Danna, as much as I love what Mike Danna has done, he's more of an interior pass rusher.
Yes.
So
it's a lot of guys.
They can stand to add. Yeah.
Who are interior guys. Because Omenihu is another, yeah, like you alluded to, like the Niners, he's really, he has that inside-outside versatility, but he's not like that designated pass rusher, win around the edge consistently. You're right. There's no one like that really on the roster. Like,
if they really wanted to go get somebody who would be a designated pass rusher to win around the edge, I mean,
unique.
Go sign Yannick Ngakoue, yeah. That is the one thing that he has done his entire career. They just need a different style of pass rusher.
I agree.
I think they need to mix it up. That'll help out Chris Jones and everybody else on the defensive line a lot.
I would like that. I think that makes a ton of sense. Otherwise, I've talked a lot about how this young defense played so much better down the stretch. I think this is the year when you can kind of cash in on some of those reps, right? All those young DBs who played last year and kind of had their ups and downs and went through the rookie struggles, but had big moments at the end of the season. Now you benefit from that because, Brian Cook's going to start. Thornhill's gone. That's big. That's a big transition. McDuffie, hopefully you get a full year out of him. He was great as a rookie. And if you do, then it's like, okay, between him, Snead, you know, Watson, we'll see how he gets used. There's a lot of, and then linebacker group, which was so long, felt like a weakness. Well, not for so long, but like talking about Mahomes era, suddenly feels like a strength. I mean, you know, they signed Drew Tranquil, who's better in coverage, but I think gives them a nice change up. But because they've got all these thumpers at linebacker, if they're all healthy, that's a really, between, you know, Gay, Bolton, Chennault, Tranquil, that's a pretty deep group. It's pretty talented.
It is very talented, and it's also versatile. When you look at what offenses want to do now, which is get teams into heavier personnel and then pass out of those looks, we're going to see a lot more 21, a lot more 12 personnel. Yeah. If you're going to have multiple linebackers on the field, they should be able to do different things. I think adding Drew Tranquil was great for them because, like you said, he was really good in coverage. That's something that Leo Chennault just isn't at right now. What Leo Chennault is a very good run defender. He will come up and thump a guard if he has to. Nick Bolton was awesome last year. I really liked how Willie Gay and Nick Bolton both played. They're both so fast to the ball. They both get there in an instant. And like you said, with the young DBs, they were so good on the back half of the season. I think through the first 8 weeks, pre-bye week, they were 25th in EPA allowed per pass attempt. Post-bye, they were 6th. So they took a huge jump. I really like how Joshua Williams played. So now you have kind of a good problem opposite Legarius Sneed. You can play Jalen Watson or you can play Joshua Williams. Brian Cook, like you said, is going to start. Love Trent McDuffie in the nickel. He would come up and tackle, and he was really tough.
He was so good. Okay,
I see.
Last year.
He's.
Mm-hmm. And he's a different kind of nickel from Sneed. Like in terms of, you know, it's, I think to your point, what Steve Spagnuolo really has the ability is to play matchup football on the back end with all of these versatile, not just DBs, but linebackers. So yeah, I'm really excited about this back seven for Kansas City. Front, defensive tackle concerns, a little bit of a concern. Pass rush is okay. Outside of Jones, could use a little bit of help, but they're the Chiefs. They'll be fine. Let's take a quick break and then talk about teams that may or may not be fine.
Tickets to the game, merch, meals at iconic restaurants, stays at Caesar's Palace, all this can be yours when you bet with Caesar's Sportsbook. Win or lose, every bet earns reward credits, which you can redeem across the empire. Now, if you haven't started yet, register using code OMAHAFULL, and then place your first bet up to $1,250. If you win, great, keep those winnings. But if you lose, you'll get your stake back as a bonus bet. 21 and older only, offer valid and must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Massachusetts, Maryland, Michigan, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, and Wyoming only.
New users and first $10 plus wagers only. Must register with an eligible promo code. Bet amount of qualifying wager returned only if wager is settled as a loss.
Maximum bonus bet, $1,250. Bonus bet expires 14 days after receipt.
Tier credits and reward credits will be added to the account within 7 days after qualifying wager settles. See caesars.com/promos for full terms. Void where prohibited. Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Licensed through Horseshoe, Bossier City, and Harris, New Orleans.
Massachusetts, call 1-800-327-5050 or visit gamblinghelplinema.org.
Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Tennessee,
Virginia, West Virginia, Ohio, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harris, Philadelphia.
If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER. That's 1-800-426-2537. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net.
We all know about the speed of sound, but have you ever thought about the sounds of speeding? If you drive over the speed limit, there are lots of different sounds you might hear. Drive too fast and you could hear the sound of your vehicle crashing, the sound of ambulances and first responders desperately trying to free you from the wreckage. You could hear the beeps of a heart monitor. You could hear doctors and nurses in an emergency room as you're being treated for your injuries. You could hear the sound of worried family members in the hospital waiting room, hoping to hear that you're okay. You could even hear the sound of people crying at a funeral. Because if you drive over the speed limit, whether by a lot or by a little, you can do damage that's beyond repair. You could seriously injure yourself, or worse, you could hurt and even kill someone else. When you speed, you put everyone on the road in danger, one way or another. Speeding catches up with you. Paid for by NHTSA.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. And I have to say, speaking from experience recently, having tried it for the first time in Detroit, it is absolutely delicious. Right now, you can get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Let's do the Chargers. I think the Chargers, most people have penciled in kind of number 2 behind the Chiefs. I probably agree. But this feels like this is a big year for this team. We start there. Like, not only is Brandon Staley probably on the hot seat, it feels like a big year for Justin Herbert because I talked about this on the Le Batard show this morning. I think he's sort of divisive on the internet. I think in large part because I don't think there's just enough fans to defend him. But I also think he's a guy where we've really, I think tape heads love him because he's so talented and there's so much to like about his game. But also I think he's a player where you have to really like context. He's a player where it's like, I think the flip side, like those who defend him and support him say context matters a lot and point to the injuries, the play calling, whatever. And then on the other side, those who do not like him or who don't like the fact that he's viewed maybe in different light from their quarterback call all of those things excuses. So this year, and this is why I guess it doesn't matter for him in the like scheme of like real things, but it matters in the public discourse. This year, I would argue he goes into this season with probably the best situation he's had since becoming an NFL quarterback. The Chargers' offensive line looks finally healthy. Knock on wood, every freaking surface. I think many people, I imagine you're in this group, JP, view going from Joe Lombardi to Kellen Moore as an upgrade. Play caller, Mike Williams and Keenan Allen both entered the season healthy, and they're adding Quentin Johnston, who's a big yards after the catch threat to this receiving group. Do you feel like everything I just described solves the problems we had that the Chargers offense had last year?
I mean, it's kind of a cop-out answer to say, I'm just not sure yet. I think one of my biggest questions that I have for the Chargers is how much of a difference is there between the Kellen Moore offense and Joe Lombardi? I think when you look at both these Cowboys offense and the Chargers offense side by side, they kind of struggled with the same things, which was congestion, lack of explosiveness. Everything yeah. felt like it was on the quarterback to make an absolutely perfect throw, whether that be because of injuries, whether that be because of inconsistency along the offensive line, which both Dallas and Los Angeles struggled with, or whether that be, it might just be that's how the quarterback plays. I think with Justin Herbert, he is so much of a robot quarterback that he wants to get from 1 to 2 to 3 as many times as possible. When sometimes he can just say, I'm really good at this. I can throw the ball downfield if I wanted to. And that's really the biggest thing. Can Kellen Moore, one, coax that ability back out of Justin Herbert? His average depth of target has gone down since his rookie year. And I think that's kind of a result of, one, the beatings he took from his rookie year to this through this previous year. And also just how smart of a player he is and the ability that he has to get from 1 to 2 to 3. So I wonder how much of the offense is going to change. Can Kellen Moore coax that out of him? And can they be a little better in the short area, like short yards? Because they were horrendous in getting the short yardage.
The Herbert haters are like, you're saying he doesn't throw downfield because he's too smart? They're so mad. He's risk averse. I think that's worth noting, though. Yeah. It's not just the progression stuff. I do think he's since entering the NFL, been pretty risk averse as a quarterback. To his benefit and his detriment at times. I think it's like that combination of risk aversion and arm talent is what drives us crazy sometimes but again, risk averse isn't just in terms of wanting to avoid interceptions. I also think offensive line and injuries have played a role in that risk aversion, certainly did last year. So yeah, I think I'll be interested in seeing how much more explosive they look from the jump. I'm not sure how much Quentin Johnston say changes that, Beth.
I'm not either.
You know, yeah, right? Like, I think we all thought they were going to take a speedster, like a Flowers or an Addison or whatever. Johnston is a guy where he can win downfield. He's fast, but the explosiveness he brings is as a yards after catch threat. And I'm also like not sure how they're going to use him early on, because I think, you know, the problem with him, or I guess the questions were about his hands and his, and, you know, I don't think he's going to come into the NFL being used as like a, you know, true, like, you know, boundary receiver, run every route. Like, I think they're going to really try to come up with ways to use him as a yak threat. Some of that will be on, you know, schemed up touches. Some of that will just be on crossers and slants and that kind of, I mean, I don't know. I'm not sure if he is like the exact solve in terms of like stretching the field from a spatial perspective.
Yeah, I don't know if it's the, I don't think it's the speed that they needed. I think Quentin Johnston should be on the Christian Watson diet of rookie wide receiver early, which is jet sweeps, yeah. Get him running along the x-axis and the y-axis, meaning you either run fast in a straight line across the field or fast in a straight line down the field. I don't know if he's as good of a route runner to be kind of this slot receiver, even boundary receiver, to win consistently. And I don't think his hands are good enough right now to be a consistent winner on the outside. So I think you have to get him on that jet sweep, get him design touches where he can use that ability after the catch to make it, to see what he did in college. So I'm just wondering, it makes sense. Like I understand you getting to the answer that you did. I just don't know if the process here is going to stop, right?
That's a good way to put it. He's a good player. I think he's going to be useful. I think he adds something different to their offense. It just wasn't like, oh, this is the glaring, like the, you know, it wasn't like the kind of perfect solution for the problem watching them last year. I will say this. I think for as much time as we spend talking about how the Chargers offense needs to be explosive, the run game was arguably the bigger or as big of an issue last year, and that certainly came to a head in the playoffs. I think the lack of rushing efficiency, particularly on early downs, is as responsible as anything for the collapse to your Jaguars. And while I think you can point to Kellen Warren and his success calling rushing offense attacks in Dallas and hope that he can come in and make it better, I think it's just about the players, honestly. Yeah. Like, you know, when I think about how bad they were running the football last year, to me, it was really just blocking. And maybe, you know, Eckler could do more. I know, you know, he didn't rank particularly high in some of the NGS stats that point that try to isolate the back. But like, I really think just having a healthy offensive line is the most important thing to getting this rushing game back on track. I mean, I was just looking at splits between 2022 and 2021. And the thing that really, because 2021, they were pretty average, slightly above average rushing team. 2022, that drops. The most glaring stat, and there's quite a few of them, is just how bad they were last year on outside runs, worse than the NFL in yards per carry, rushing outside the tackles, particularly atrocious last year rushing to the left side, whereas in 2021, they were phenomenal, sixth in the NFL in yards per carry. That's a Rashawn Slater stat. So I think just getting Rashawn Slater back is going to help a lot in that regard.
I think Rashawn Slater is going to help a lot. I think Austin Eckler is really good. I think he's going to get a lot better. I think where he's at his best is using burst and vision. So I think the outside zone stuff, getting Rashawn Slater back is going to help him a lot there. But I also think the defenses have started to adjust now to outside zones. Like when I was watching the Chargers, they don't really, last year, they didn't really run that much outside of like outside zone and counter. There's a lot of Gerald Everett blocking where I was like, I don't really need to see this right now. So I think they're going to try to do a little bit more like duo inside zone runs. But for that, I think you need a different style of back than Austin Eckler. I love Austin Eckler, but I don't think that's necessarily where you can use him best. I think they need kind of a back that will be able to get those short yardage runs where you can't run outside zone every time. So getting a bigger back in there will help them out a lot. But like you said, just getting Rashawn Slater back is going to give that entire offense a boost. I think they need not only a healthy offensive line, but a consistently healthy one. They were moving around pieces like every week.
Interesting to see if they are a guy who might, I don't know, like Zeke Elliott is out there.
Zeke is very much the guy that I had in mind. Like,
as you're describing,
he'll get you a yard.
They also really need a blocking tight end, which they just don't have on their roster. But that's a great point about the diversity of the run game. I mean, that is something that Moore was very good at in Dallas. It was a very diverse run game and one that got more diverse, I think, over the course of his time there. So if there's things that they can do to mix it up, this is like one of the kind of bigger, like the football becoming more gap oriented in response to the way defenses mm-hmm. play. The outside zone is kind of one of the metas of the NFL, right? Like, so that would be something that is interesting to keep an eye on. This is the Chargers Dolphins is like one of the games I have week one I want to watch. And I think the Chargers offense and what it looks like and whether there's changes is one of the more interesting storylines in the NFL. The Chargers defense on the flip side largely looks the same. The biggest difference is that they brought in Eric Kendricks at linebacker, which was kind of like their biggest signing of the offseason. I think the hope there is, you know, it's interesting. Kind of Brandon Staley in his time as Chargers head coach has yet to solve the run defense problem. It was massive problem last year. They did get better as the season went on, but they still ultimately finished 29th versus the run versus 10th versus the pass. He brought in some of his guys last year, and I think they actually did help a lot. Those defensive tackles played pretty well, but the problem in run defense to me was not about the defensive line, was not about the interior. It was about the edges and the second level and corners and that, yeah. So I guess the hope is that Kendricks can shore that up. I mean, do you think that they can be, because it was awful. This run defense was awful last year.
It was horrible. Horrible. I think like a few weeks ago, there was like this quote where like Brandon Staley was like, yeah, we'll give up 4 or 5 yards a run if we can stop the 40-yard explosives. And then I went and looked up how many yards they gave up per carry, and it's almost 6. And I'm like, hey, man, you might want to slow down here. We know you want to stop the explosive passes, but if teams are just going to run the ball for 6 yards a carry on you, that's a first down like every two plays. So I think one thing that they really struggled with, I think the new additions that they had last year helped, but the depth really, really killed them. And it's kind of the same like every year for the Chargers. They don't have a lot of depth up front. And also their linebackers, Kenneth Murray, has just not worked out. I don't think that experiment has worked out at all. I don't think he's very good against the run. I don't think he sees it very well. I think Deion Henley, the rookie, will probably get a lot more playing time as the season goes on. And I also think with the way that they play their light boxes, they ask a lot of their nickel.
Yep.
And Asante Samuel Jr. played nickel last year. He's not a tackler at that position. We talked about Justin Herbert being risk averse when it comes to turnovers. Asante Samuel Jr. is risk averse when it comes to tackling people.
He's good in coverage,
He's great in coverage, but I don't think that's the spot for him. Alex Katzen, Chargers Wire, he mentioned that Jasir Taylor is getting the first team snaps in the slot. So now you're kind of stuck with this problem of where does Asante Samuel Jr. play? Does he play on the outside where he's 5'10", 180 maybe, and you go up against some of the bigger receivers and you have that problem? Or do you try and play him a slot again where you ask so much of that slot guy to be in the run fit that I don't think you can play him there? So I think it's gonna be interesting to see how Brandon Staley kind of adjusts because now they're just kind of hammering them and hammering runs at their nickel defender who just can't tackle. So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
One of the biggest gaps, and when I was trying to like look at Chargers run defense and like find okay, what's the problem here? They actually finished first in power, which is Football Outsiders metric for runs on third or fourth downs, 2 yards or less. So basically, you know, Sebastian Joseph Day, for example, who I was one of the guys that Staley brought in. Like that's him. That's their defensive. You know, they're actually. It's not that they were like soft there, and then they finished 31st in second level run defense. And I think that gap is really what explains that high yards per carry number. I mean, the thing about Samuel Jr. is like if you play him outside, teams are going to run at him. He just has to get better at it, frankly, to be playable at this point. J.C. Jackson is someone to keep an eye on, too, in terms of like he had a season-ending injury last year. I'm not quite sure what his status is right now, but he's in the mix as well. The second-level defenders all have to be better at stopping the run. I think Kendricks will help. Otherwise the Chargers pass defense that I think did figure things out last year, especially, you know, we talked a lot about Staley's game plans against some of the better offenses in the league. I think he got good play out of guys like Michael Davis, who none of us had penciled in as being like an impact member of that secondary. Derwin James is still Derwin James. When you consider all the injuries they had on defense last year, the fact that they finished, that they played as well as they did at points is kind of impressive. Yeah. They didn't have Joey Bosa for like the vast majority of the season. Like that's, you know, Mac, I thought had a bit of a down year, but they got to solve the run defense thing and none of it will matter. And that's kind of like, I talked about this with the Eagles last week, JP, but like, I'm not saying run defense matters more, like that certainly still doesn't matter as much as pass defense in today's NFL, but I think because of sort of what we're talking about with the run game, because of the way sort of football has moved over the last couple of years, you have to be competent at it, and they were not competent at it last year.
Yeah, I think with the cyclical nature of football, we're going to start seeing it this year with more teams getting in the 12, 21 personnel because of how much lighter the defenders are in the box and how many light box counts teams are playing. They're just going to say like, yeah, we'll just run power and counter at you until those 240-pound edges just cannot stop the run anymore. So it is going to be interesting to see how Brandon Staley kind of adjusts to that, because he was kind of the one that saw the light box like revolution kind of start in the NFL. I think the J.C. Jackson thing is very interesting because last year, whether it be because of injuries and just because they didn't have enough bodies, Brandon Staley played a lot more man after J.C. Jackson got hurt, which, like I said, could be due to they just didn't have. It's a lot easier to tell your 4-string DB to just go guard that man every week. But J.C. Jackson comes from a man-based scheme in New England. And before he got hurt, he was not that great at adjusting to the zone heavy defense that Brandon Staley played. So I wonder if they do play a little bit more man, which works a little bit better with the personnel that he has. He doesn't have to play zone all the time because these guys can get after it in man coverage.
Yeah, that'll be it. It was an interesting evolution in his defense as the year went on. It wasn't, I think we associated him, you know, with the coming from the Rams with light boxes, gap and a half, zone too high. And, you know, the Chargers, that's not what they did at the end of last year. It was really, I do think it was very game plan specific, the defense, but I also, to your point, they did play a ton of man. I think he really needs, the edges are very important in run defense as well in that system. And Mac was not good in run defense last year. I mean, when Bosa went out, you're looking at like Chris Rumpf, who's undersized. They drafted the kid out of, was it UCLA or USC? Thule, who's a, he's going to be probably more of like a designated USC. Thule, Tupelodu.
Yeah.
who's, you know, I think he'll be more of like a designated pass rusher at the beginning and backing up either Bosa or Mac. But there's still good players. It's a good defense. There's good players. They still have, you know, Bosa's still amazing. James is still amazing. Hopefully Kendrick shores up the run defense. Curious to see how the cornerback room shakes out. It'll be interesting to watch. I'll just put it that way. I'm very interested to see their week one game plan against Miami. I can't wait, actually.
Headed towards the Twitter dialogue bowl too. That is going to be such an unsafe day for anybody who says Justin Herbert is good, and just an unsafe day for anybody who is a Tua believer.
It's just that, it's a great day for people who like football nerd stuff, because I think McDaniel versus Staley round two is going to be a really fascinating one. Okay. The Raiders. Some news. The Raiders signed Marcus Peters. They really needed Marcus Peters.
Yeah.
Even with Marcus Peters coming off of a down year, he is still probably the best outside cornerback on their roster. This is a pretty challenged secondary, shall we say. They were one of the worst pass defenses in the NFL last year. They weren't really good at anything except Max Crosby. That's what they were good at. They were good at Max Crosby. Let's start with the defense before we get to the offense. Can you make a case for the defense being better this year with changes that they've made and additions?
I mean, if Marcus Peters can turn back the clock a little bit, I mean, they played the eighth most man coverage snaps last year, and that's what Marcus Peters does. I think a lot of the down year in Baltimore was associated with he's just not a zone corner. He just isn't that at this stage in his career. So maybe the scheme change will help him a little bit, but even outside of that, you need so much more help in that secondary. I still have zero faith in the linebackers. Their defensive line will probably be fine. As long as you have Max Crosby, you will be fine to good. But outside of like that front four, everybody else is a major question mark.
So Nate Hobbs was a good slot corner, so maybe moving him back inside helps. Duke Shelley, but then it's like, well, then does Duke Shelley play outside? He was good for Minnesota, but I don't know if you want him. I mean, he's like 5'9", maybe. Generous. They drafted Ja'Quarian Bennett, who's a corner I kind of like out of Maryland. So maybe, yeah. It's not great. You bring in Marcus Epps, who's a competent safety. Okay, so like the most optimistic picture for this defense is that Tyree Wilson, who I believe is still out with the foot thing, which is not great. Tyree Wilson, Max Crosby, Chandler Jones returns to form. It's not the best case scenario is not a lot of guys like returning to form or playing their best football or rising up to the upside case. So that's, you have a great four-man rush. Marcus Peters goes back to not that long ago, you know, playing really well, gets a bunch of turnovers. Nate Hobbs goes back to the slot potential we saw earlier in his career. Duke Shelley is, you know, this kind of scrappy ball hawk that he has been at times. Ja'Quarian Bennett, maybe you get flashes from him if he plays. Merrig plays like he did at the very beginning of his career. There was a little bit more promise there. Marcus Epps shores up the back end. It's a lot of conditional things happening at once. That's to me the best possible scenario for the Raiders defense.
Yeah, it's a lot of ifs. It's basically kind of going off of the idea that pressure creates turnovers or problems to help the other part of the defense. They're leaning all in on that. I think Chandler Jones will return to form at this season. I think he started to play a little better towards the later end of the season. Tyree Wilson still being on the physically unable to perform list really sucks, but I thought they were going to kind of slow play him back all along because coming off of foot surgery, and he was a 4-eye kind of five tech in Texas Tech, and now he's going to be out on the edge in the NFL. I think they're going to slow play that all along, but you can kind of see, like, on pass rush downs, Tyree Wilson on the inside, Chandler Jones and Max Crosby on the outside, and be like, hey,
that's, we can scary, turn this
into something. I like how that, I think that can work, but you know, it's a lot of wishing, a lot of hoping in the, on the back end. And I mean, love Ja'Cory Bennett, but he, I think he and Duke Shelley are the same size. So
yeah,
it's going to be a lot of wishing, a lot of hoping. I think Nate Hobbs can return to form in the slot, but I don't know. It's a, like you said, a lot of hoping for this secondary.
Yeah. Let's talk about the offense. There's not much else. That's depressing. Max Crosby's awesome. He's so good.
Yeah.
He's such a good player. He's become, I posted a play he made blowing up the run. He's so complete now. It's cool. Okay. There you go, Raiders fans.
Yeah.
He's, we like Max Crosby.
The best backside run defender in the NFL.
Dude.
Just watching him chase down plays. It's not like he's chasing down like 6 yard tackles. He's like 2 yard tackles.
He is. Yes. He's relentless. And he's gotten so good at IDing runs and so good against the option. Like, it's good. You have to be that size to be good in run defense.
He is the literal definition of relentless. I think he played the most snaps of every defensive lineman,
really,
both in pass rush and run defense. He never left the field and was still amazing. Like, we throw relentless out there a lot. Max Crosby is really, truly relentless.
I posted a play that that was one of his like many TFLs, and I feel bad because it's Andres Pete is coming across as part of the counter action, and Saints fans are immediately like, Andres, because he gets under Andres Pete and then Andres Pete just goes flying. But Ted Wynn, who covers the Raiders, does a great job for The Athletic, talked to him about that play. He replied to me, and I guess Crosby knew what it was because of the way the tight ends were oriented. Just super big brain stuff, plus a little bit of freelancing. You know, it's always awesome. Okay, the offense. So the offense is really interesting. I actually am very intrigued by this Raiders offense. I'm very curious to watch it. Going from Jimmy G to Derek Carr, it's an interesting move because I think Derek Carr, and I've said this before, is a more talented quarterback. He's got more arm talent. I think he's more likely to throw downfield. He can play plays out of structure. I believe all of that, but I also believe Jimmy G's probably going to be better in a Josh McDaniels offense. That's what really struck me last year. Like, Carr just never seemed to buy into it, and it requires buy-in. You need a quarterback who's going to, you know, I mean, it's not just an assumption that this offense is going to be Patriots-like because it's Josh McDaniels. Everything they have done, everything this organization has done from a personnel perspective speaks to the fact that they want it to look more like a Patriots offense.
Yeah, and as much as I think Jimmy G is a goofy goober playing quarterback, what he does very well is he's very good at passing out of 12 and 21 personnel. I think one of the things that I noticed watching the Raiders offense is you kind of realize why they traded Darren Waller, which is, as good as he was the receiver, he cannot block. And that basically rendered their 12 personnel kind of useless because you can just play a nickel there. You don't have to force them into playing heavier personnel. So I think with adding, I think it's Austin Hooper, and then they also got Michael Mayer. Hooper, Mayer, I think they're going to lean heavily into 12-21 run game. I love Jakob Johnson. This is very much a niche football thing, but I love how Jakob Johnson plays. He's such an awesome run blocker. I'm so glad they brought him from New England to Las Vegas because he just, once they started giving him more snaps and they started to lean heavily into the 12 and 21 personnel, I feel like that's when their offense really took off. But I do kind of wonder, like, is the run game going to actually be like a little different, a little worse without Josh Jacobs? Like, I think Josh Jacobs.
He ain't holding out. He's not. He's playing. Stop it.
I don't know.
Dude, Saquon just agreed to like an incentive for nickels. Like,
I, I would like to see if Josh Jacobs holds out. I don't know if he will, but if he does, like, that's a very singularly important part of that offense. I mean, his first down rate was first among running backs. He was not only explosive, but he kept the chains moving. So I think if you have Josh Jacobs, I can very much see a world where Jimmy G is better in this offense than Derek Carr, because that's what Jimmy G does. He can do this very well.
Yeah, it's like, we know what the offense, we know what Josh McDaniels wants it to look like. They want the power running game. You talked about it, 12 personnel, 21 personnel, motion, play action. When it's not play action, the ball's out quick, middle of the field. Jimmy G does all that. That's a Jimmy G offense, right? You think about the offense, you think about the players they added, it makes sense. My concern, beyond whether, you know, that's the ceiling of that, I think, is simply, I think, the offensive line, because we do know Jimmy G, for all the fact he does all of those things, but he also is not he's a pressure sensitive quarterback. This is not a great pass protecting offensive line. So I think that's where the vision starts to run into a little bit of trouble, is when you're like, okay, this makes sense. I get it. Jimmy G, Josh McDaniels, this offense, it makes sense. Patriots. Yeah. Patriots, Vegas. But the offensive line is not great. And I think that's where you can start running into problems.
Yeah, I think for this offense to actually get to a point where you can be like, hey, if we put all this stuff right together, we can possibly make a run for the playoffs. It has to be the offensive line getting better and pass protection. Because like you said, Jimmy G is very, very pressure sensitive. He's going to spin move out or just immediately throw it to the defense. You have to figure out a better way to protect Jimmy G for this entire thing to work, whether it be through play action, whether it be through adding extra personnel to keep them in or keep extra blockers in. You got to find a way to protect Jimmy G, because I mean, as long as Devontae Adams is out there, you can just say point and shoot, point and fire. Like, hey, you give the ball to Devontae Adams and just figure it out after that. He was still like really awesome last year.
Dude, but so, oh, I feel so bad for him. I mean, like, they were not great last year, but at least he got to play with his friend, and he played with a friend who was going to throw to him outside at all costs, downfield, let him win. Now his friend has been replaced by one of the quarterbacks who was most averse to doing that in the entire NFL. Like, I mean, and he's barely agitated about it, but you can't be happy if you're Devontae Adams with the direction of this.
I'd be a little frustrated coming off of 14 touchdowns, really extending. He was going deep a lot, like later on in the season, as they started to get into that 21 personnel, as they started to see more defenses have heavier looks. You basically created an isolation play for Devontae Adams, and he's going to win that like 80 to 90% of the time. So you go from Derek Carr actually saying like, yeah, I'll throw it deep to you anytime, to Jimmy G, who will probably do that like once every 35 snaps, maybe. I'd be a little frustrated, but Hunter Renfro is probably going to kill it. Hunter Renfro is probably going to see a whole lot of targets.
Yeah. I don't know what the Raiders are doing. I know what they're doing. I just don't approve entirely of it all. Even though everything they did offensively, I'm like, it's probably going to look better. I actually think this is going to be a better offense, but it's still, they're one of the more confusing teams to me in the NFL in terms of kind of like, what's the long-term plan here? Like, what do you know, you're not going to win the division. It's like they're building it in Josh McDaniels' image, but to what end is what I ask. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I have them fourth. I'm thinking probably Chiefs, Chargers, Broncos, Raiders. And I say that, by the way, believing that I think the Raiders offense could be more efficient than the Broncos offense. I just think the Broncos defense is better, way better.
Yeah, I think right now Chiefs, Chargers, Broncos, Raiders, because I just have far too many questions about the Raiders defense. But I honestly kind of think if everything like work, it's again a big if everything works out right with the Broncos, like they can really challenge the Chargers for that second spot. I think the defense is still going to be pretty good.
Yeah.
If he's not last year Russell Wilson, then maybe you get something here.
I think it's the question of just kind of like, how good does he have to be? If he's just average, is the defense good enough? I don't know. It's an interesting division. I'll put it that way. I think we can all agree, however, that the Chiefs will be fine.
Chiefs and everybody else right now.
Yeah, as always. Well, that's the NFL. JP Acosta, for those who aren't familiar with your work at SB Nation, where should I direct people?
So go on Twitter or X now, at Acosta32 _JP. I tweet a lot of stuff. During the football season, I'm going to be bringing back Establish the Fun, which is a column I write about football at every level. I think football's fun, and I like to write about the things that are fun in football. So every week, every Friday, I write Established Fun. And yeah, I'll just be tweeting about football, tweeting about random things, or I don't want to say what they call it now because I don't know how to pronounce it.
You're X-ing.
I don't want to say, yeah, I'm X-ing. Right. See what I'm X-ing? And yeah, just follow me there.
Well, you guys should definitely check it out. Check out JB's column. It's terrific. Thank you, as always, for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.